Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler, and I'm joined as always by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. You can follow him on Twitter at I am Rick Graham. Rick, how you doing? Is fantasy baseball going well for you thus far? We were just talking about how poorly we're doing in our Pitcherless staff leagues.
Yeah, I mean, it's only a month in, so it's been going, you know, accordingly, I suppose. It's, you know, some ups and downs across the board. But, yeah, there's only, with the exception of the league, you know, your home league, I think I have a chance in every other league, but I think I've just been decimated so badly by injuries in your home league that that's going to be tough for, I'm trying to figure out ways to make up ground there. And it's been tough.
Yeah. You've been decimated by injuries on your fantasy teams and in your heart as the Red Sox have been destroyed by injuries.
Yeah. I mean, we're in a dynasty league. I'm in a dynasty league with one of our, you know, PL contributors, Estavio Maximo, and he's got Rafael Devers, and he's like, he was asking me, because he knows I'm a Red Sox fan. He's like, do the Red Sox not believe in the IL? Like, why is Devers not going to the IL? He's been out for like 5 days. I'm like, no, I think their IL is just full. They have their slots are full at the moment. They can't add him to it because, yeah, I mean,
they're running a fantasy team.
Yeah. I mean, there's literally like half the team is already on the injured list. So, yeah, what are you going to do? At least it's early in the season. If they can overcome this, then, you know, gives you hope. But yeah, it's frustrating, especially like Casas being out. I mean, the starting pitching, I see, like, that's going to happen. But like losing guys like Casas and Story for so long, that's what really hurts.
Yeah, definitely. I've been somewhat fortunate enough for the Giants to avoid a ton of injuries. I know Blake Snell just hit the IL, but things aren't going too poorly. If only the offense could find a way to hit. But we're not here to talk about hitting. We're here to talk about pitching, and more specifically relief pitching. As always, today we have on the docket news and notes and injuries. As always, we'll go over Rick's closer ranks. We'll talk about the closers rising and falling on his ranks, and then we'll wrap things up looking at early advanced statistics leaderboards, PLV, Stuff Plus, swinging strike rate, CSW, all the good stuff to help you find relievers that are either performing above what we thought they could do, or, you know, showing us that they are still legit. So let's hop right into the news and notes. We've got plenty of them. We'll start with the news. AJ Puck of the Marlins started the season as a starter, but he's set to move to the bullpen when he returns from the injured list. This is something that you hinted at a few weeks ago when Puck was struggling in the rotation and Tanner Scott was doing the same out of the bullpen. And so it seemed that Puck, who was the 2023 closer for the Marlins in the first half, was likely to have an opportunity to take over if he just got moved back to the bullpen. Now he is in that situation, and it seems like Tanner Scott's finally figuring things out. Do you think when Puck returns that he's going to, you know, give Scott a run for his money?
Probably not right away. I think, yeah, Scott has been throwing better. We still need to see Puck, you know, come back and be effective like he was early last season in the bullpen, because he's moving back to the bullpen, you know, it's not guaranteed he's gonna, you know, be dominant right away. So I'm sure they're gonna ease him back into some sort of high leverage role there when he comes back, which I don't know if we have any real timetable on that yet, but you know, he's definitely, you know, someone who, and when I have, if I have an IL spot, I've been just, you know, stashing there, as especially in leagues where I have Tanner Scott, just in case, you know, something comes up like that, where it's like, oh, Puck might, you know, if Scott starts struggling before Puck comes back. But it's, yeah, it's more of a, you know, stash Puck if you have an IL spot in deeper leagues, and see where it goes. And in holds leagues, I'm sure Puck will still be relevant when he returns.
Totally. I think in shallower leagues, you probably just keep an eye on this situation, see if Tanner Scott continues to struggle, because I think they'll want to keep him in that role if they can. But if he continues to be unable to find the strike zone and Puck looks pretty solid when he returns, then I think Puck's got a pretty solid chance to at least get into high leverage situations pretty quickly. So that's a pretty nice option that should be on your wire across the board that might be able to net you some saves in the future. We'll move over to Chicago, where Adbert Alzolay, the reigning closer, has been removed from the closer role. And that's because he's blown, I think, 4 saves already, which is crazy. Yeah. And he's just not been looking like his former self. And so right now it looks like Hector Neris is going to be the Cubs closer, even though Mark Leiter Jr. has been pitching really well this year. Mark Leiter Jr. yet to allow a run across 12 innings, 25% strikeout rate, but Neris has gotten the first 2 saves in Alzolay's absence. I think Hector Neris is clearly a pickup across the board, but do you have any other takes on this situation?
He's a pickup if you're, in deeper leagues. I mean, he's, if you're in a league where every closer's rostered, then yeah, he's worth a look. But I'm not getting too excited about him right now. So, yeah, it really depends on your call. I mean, he currently has, the worst. I asked this to our Discord yesterday, who and this person's on the closer ranks that has the worst PLV rating so far amongst all pitchers, and Hector Neris is the worst by far. I mean, he's been really, really bad this year, and you see it too. I watched these games with the Astros, and he ended up getting 2 saves. He let up the home run to Altuve, walked the first 2 batters today, but was able to get out of it because, that Astros lineup at the bottom half is really bad. But anyway, yeah, his stuff just isn't, it's just not doing anything. It's not not really generating a ton of swing and miss. It's very pedestrian. The problem is that the Cubs bullpen is just, there's no one really good here. Leiter, too. Leiter has, the ERA looks good, but his numbers don't really add up to, being excited about. I think Yancy Almonte might be the best option there. Alzolay is the best option there, but that's not going to happen for the time being. So I think Almonte would make sense, but that's not someone that's just like deep 16 team league you might take a shot on. Ben Brown really would be a really good closer. He's going to end up back in the rotation, so that's not going to happen now. But I think if that rotation does, kind of stabilize and they have 5 guys without Brown, I do wonder, Ben Brown, just the fastball curveball combo. And he's a 2-pitch guy anyway. I mean, he probably is going to end up in the bullpen at some point. So unless he develops a splitter or changeup. But yeah, I for now, I just kind of want to stay away from the situation.
Yeah, it sounds like there's nobody that really stands out, and the current guy doesn't really have the best stuff. It sounds like you feel that Alzolay will probably take over the closer role in, a few weeks.
I don't know. I mean, I understand that he's had 4 blown saves, and that's unacceptable at this point of the year. But it's not like they've been, it's not like he's just had like these absolute meltdowns and like, blowups. His ERA still like, what is it, like 4 or something? It's not like,
it's under 4.
Yeah, it's not like he's been that bad outside of the, obviously, the blown saves, which are, that's what you're supposed to, as a closer, you're supposed to prevent those, right? So I just still think he's got the best stuff there. As long as Merriweather's, not available and Ben Brown's in the rotation, I think it's, probably it should be Alzolay or Yancy Almonte would be my second favorite, option there.
All right. So grab Neris and don't prepare for him being on your team throughout the whole year as Alzolay is probably going to take over, or maybe somebody else does, because Neris will probably fall apart given the stuff he's working with. We'll move over to our pitchers that have begun rehab assignments. Yoan Duran, Matt Brash, and Paul Sewald have all begun rehab assignments. I think Brash has yet to start. I think he starts next week, but that means all 3 of these guys, all top tier relievers, are set to return soon, probably in the next couple of weeks. I don't imagine that anybody but Brash is on the waiver wire, but do these guys reclaim their closer roles as soon as they return?
I think Duran and Sewald definitely will, and then Brash will probably fill into that Stanek role. Mm-hmm. Sewald's the only one, obviously, we've talked about a little bit. He could be back this weekend. He wants to get back right now. I wonder if he feels a little bit of fire or a little bit of a threat with Ginkle. I don't think Ginkle's done enough to take that job. He's been fine. He's been good. He's been solid. He just hasn't, you know, he would probably have to, like, you know, blow the doors off the place to just absolutely, you know, steal that job from Seawald in just 1 month. So, you know, if Seawald struggles when he comes back, then yeah, we might be talking about something different in a month from now. But I think, you know, once he's back, Ginkle goes back into a setup role. But again, like, I still would hold on to Ginkle for a week or two, maybe, if you can, just to see how things play out.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of leagues are you picking up Matt Brash in?
You know, I don't, and probably in roto leagues, even 12 team roto leagues, I might, it depends on what my, you know, bench looks like. Wouldn't drop anything, any high upside options for him. But yeah, I mean, we see how Munoz is used, and there could be save opportunities. There, you know, 10 saves for, you know, for the taking there, if, you know, Brash can stay healthy for the rest of the year. So you know, in holds leagues, he's obviously, he needs to be rostered, oh, yeah. But you know, save only, I think it's, you know, 14 to 16 team leagues, most likely. But you know, if you have, like, if you just have something, if you're just trying, like, you know, sorting through end of the bench players in a 12 teamer, if you've been decimated by injuries and you're just, you know, kind of recycling guys, then, you know, Brash might be worth a look there for at least the first week or two when he's back, just to see, you know, kind of how things play out with him and the team, and if he gets some save chances.
Yeah. And in head to head or points leagues, 12 teams, I think he's also probably worth rostering just because of his boosts in ratios and strikeouts. Last year, 3.06 ERA, 34.7% strikeout rate. The whip was a little high, but it was unlucky. 380 BABIP that produced a 1.33 whip. I think if he pitches at the level that he was pitching at last year, he could be a guy with a sub 3 ERA and a ridiculous amount of strikeouts, which will help out pretty much any team. We can move on to our last bit of news, which is Brusdar Graterol of the Dodgers has been shut down from throwing again as he works his way back from an injury. He had already been shut down once, worked his way back to pitching again, and got shut down again. It sounds like we probably won't see him back until around the All-Star break if this keeps happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's been like back and forth with him. It's like, you know, at one point it's like, yeah, he's going to be out for, you know, until July. And then it's like, oh, he's, you know, working his way back. He might start a rehab assignment in the next 2 weeks. And then, yeah, now he's back to being shut down again. So I'm not expecting, I really don't know what to expect here. It's, you know, if you don't have the IL spot for him and, you know, and you're only rostering him in holds leagues anyway, you know, it's probably time to cut bait if you need to open up an IL spot.
Totally. All right. And then we'll move to our injuries. Last week, we got pretty lucky, just one injury. This week, plenty more. 7 players were placed on the 15-day IL that have a reason to be rostered in holds leagues. We'll start with Nick Birdie of the Yankees, who landed on the 15-day IL with right hip inflammation. Cody Morris was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. And we had actually talked quite a bit about how Nick Birdie could be interesting if he stayed healthy. And neither of us expressed confidence in that hypothetical because of the Yankees' inability to keep any player healthy, let alone relief pitchers. And Nick Birdie hits the IL after pitching to a 0 ERA across his first 6 1/3. He was looking really good, and now he's gone. Probably won't be too much longer than the minimum. Right hip inflammation doesn't seem too serious. But in the meantime, it looks like Dennis Santana and Victor Gonzalez are moving up the holds ranks. We've seen Victor Gonzalez lock down a save in the past week, and Dennis Santana, while pitching to a 5.06 ERA, has still been used in high leverage situations. This bullpen has gotten so shallow so fast.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Victor Gonzalez isn't someone, yeah, who I really trust, and neither is Santana at the moment. Caleb Ferguson struggling was really, really an issue for them. And now, yeah, Luke Weaver is getting a lot of, you know, high leverage spots. He's got 2 holds over the past week, and they're just hanging on for dear life until they get some guys back here. And even Hamilton, you know, Hamilton has really not been the same guy he was in the first, you know, week or two of the season. Mm-hmm. He's kind of come back to earth. So yeah, this whole bullpen is very questionable at the moment. you know, you just look at the, just from a, you know, strikeout rate percentage, it's like none of these guys can really miss bats. So they're playing with fire here, but they do, you know, Canely's coming back. Birdie could be back soon. I think, like, you know, it's not the best option, but he's probably better than what they have. Lou Trevino is working his way back. It's, you know, they're going to have to go out and get somebody probably. Them and the Cubs are, you know, they're just, the bullpen is just so thin at the moment where those two teams, and they're trying to compete. They want to compete. They need to go out and get a bullpen arm probably sooner than the trade deadline.
Yeah, and think about what happens when Clay Holmes starts coming back to earth. He's pitched to a 0 ERA across his first 12 innings, and I don't expect that to hold up. You mentioned the low strikeout rate totals among players with at least 6 innings pitched that are on the active roster in this bullpen. The highest strikeout rate is 22.7%. That goes to Caleb Ferguson, who has a 5.59 ERA. So things are not going well in New York. And I don't think I'd be targeting many of these middle relief guys for holds. I know they're probably decent additions because they're under the radar in like 15 team holds leagues, because those are deep enough where a guy like, I don't know, Dennis Santana or Victor Gonzalez, where they're not producing much elsewhere outside of getting holds or saves, but that can be valuable in those leagues. But anything shallower, I would stay far away from New York.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now. I mean, I'm mostly staying away from this bullpen for holds, except for Hamilton and, you know, maybe Victor Gonzalez in really deep leagues. But it's sketchy at the moment.
All right, we'll stay in the AL East and talk about Chad Green, who is placed on the 15-day IL with a right teres major strain. That's a right shoulder strain. Nate Pearson was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Chad Green had been getting a couple of saves with Jordan Romano on the IL, but now with Romano back and Swanson back and Yimi Garcia continuing to pitch well, Green was sort of relegated to a middle relief role, pitching like the sixth or the seventh inning because of so many options ahead of him. I don't think this really switches things up a lot in terms of how the holds ladder is going. I think Trevor Richards will probably get some more opportunities. Nate Pearson might finally get some opportunities as well. He's pitched really well thus far. But with the top three of Romano and Garcia and Swanson there, there's not too many holds or saves to go around for anybody else.
No. Yeah. I don't think the, you know, Chad Green injury does much there. Maybe Pearson, but he's been okay. He can, I know, you know, 2.25 ERA, 30.6% K rate, but since he's been back, he's been, he hasn't been great, which it's only been 2 outings, but, I think maybe Trevor Richards gets a little bit more of a chance to get holds, but yeah, it's really that big, that top three of Romano, Garcia, and Swanson that you want to target.
Yeah, and those three are really good. Yimi Garcia has been crazy this year.
Yimi Garcia has been great. Yeah, he's been awesome this year.
Yeah, 0.79 ERA, 39.5% strikeout rate. I would not be surprised if Jordan Romano loses the closer role at some point if Garcia continues to pitch like this.
I would never have thought that, you know, a month ago, but the way Garcia is pitching and Romano's been shaky so far, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be totally shocked at this point.
All right, we'll stick in the East and move over to the National League, where Brooks Raley, a lefty for the Mets, was placed on the 15-day IL with left elbow inflammation. He's only expected to miss the minimum amount of time despite the scary nature of that injury. Grant Hartwig was recalled from the minors initially, but then he was optioned in a corresponding move there. Josh Walker was recalled from the minors. Brooks Raley was the top left-handed option in this bullpen, and with him gone, it looks like Adam Ottavino is going to be the top guy by himself. And I think Reed Garrett might start seeing more high leverage opportunities. He's gotten a save thus far, but he's been pitching so well that using him in a multi-inning relief role earlier in games feels like you're wasting him when you could use him in the seventh and the eighth, maybe both, and really shut down games. It's ridiculous what Garrett's doing. 0.71 ERA in 12 and two thirds. He's got a 50% strikeout rate. He has a higher strikeout rate than Edwin Diaz and Adam Ottavino. Adam Ottavino somehow 48.6% strikeout rate. What's going on there?
Yeah, I do wonder. And I was going to look at this before we started tonight. I got to wonder who have the Mets played? Because between Ottavino, Garrett, and Jake Diekman, I mean, those guys have like ridiculous K rates right now. And they're good relievers, but I just feel like something, like, who are they facing that they're like, I don't know. I mean, Garrett, I'm tentatively buying in on Reed Garrett, and we'll talk about him more later because he's all over those those leaderboards for right now. But you know, Ottavino as well. It's like, I mean, these guys are, you know, this bullpen has been really, really good. I mean, look at all the numbers from everyone in this bullpen.
Yeah. Highest ERA, 3.38.
Yeah. And that's from Diekman, who has a 39% strikeout rate.
You want to hear the teams that they faced?
Yeah. What's this been? Because I got to imagine something's going on here.
They're currently the last series they played was against the Giants. Previously, it was the Dodgers. Before that, it was the Pirates. Before that, it was the Royals. Before that, it was the Braves.
Okay.
And pretty decent legit matchups.
Teams, yeah.
They played the Reds in Cincinnati. They played the Tigers, and I think their first series was against the Brewers.
All right, so there's some swing and miss there in those teams, but I mean, they have the Dodgers and Braves. Dodgers they and handled. Braves,
yeah.
So, I mean, this could be legit. I think it's going to come back down to earth a little bit. Obviously, this isn't sustainable, but now we talk about the next lefty up. It's Jake Diekman, I guess, has a little bit more value without Rayleigh. He's still such a wild card with his command, but the stuff's obviously still good. Even at his age, he's still able to get a lot of swing and miss. And yeah, I mean, Josh Walker maybe is interesting, but definitely, you know, Diekman's worth a watch on in holds leagues at the moment. But I don't, you know, I think between, you know, Ottavino, Garrett, and Diaz, those are the three you want to roster in any type of save hold league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't think Diekman's going to be a super automatic pickup, given that Rayleigh's expected to return in 2 weeks. So it's not going to be, and at this point now, it's down to, 12 days or something. It's not going to be long that Brooks Rayleigh is out, meaning Diekman will be relegated back into his previous role shortly. Before we move over to the rest of our injuries, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen talking relievers. We're in the middle of running through the injuries from the last week. There have been a lot, so we had to take a break midway. We'll hop back into it with a big one. Pete Fairbanks of the Rays was placed on the 15-day IL with a nerve-related issue. In a corresponding move, Kevin Kelly was recalled from the minors, but this is pretty big because, I mean, we know Fairbanks is due for at least one IL stint throughout the year, but he's also struggled thus far with a 9 ERA across his first 7 innings. And this means that the closer role is now opened up. I think right now it's up in the air who it is. I think if we had guessed before the season or before the injury, who would it be? We would have likely guessed Jason Adam. He leads the team with 7 holds. He filled in basically every single time Fairbanks went down last year. He's been pitching really well, but Garrett Clevinger has been the one to record the team's last 2 saves. Clevinger is a lefty, so maybe it's a situation where matchups were dictating the move to Clevinger there. But do you think both of these guys, Adam and Clevinger, are worth picking up, or do you think it's like a one or the other or neither, given the way the Rays like to use their bullpen?
I would still pick up I would only be interested in Adam. I think, yeah, you're gonna see Clevinger and Poche probably get, you know, the vulture save here and there. But like last year, and this, Adam had 10 out of the 12 save chances when Fairbanks was out last year. So I don't see why they wouldn't stick with that. I know they've already done that. They've already gone away from it for one game. But there was one game where Adam was in the ninth, just was in a save situation. I would add Adam, but it's not, you know, from what I can tell, I wouldn't imagine Fairbanks is out more than the minimum.
What is a nerve related issue? What does that even mean?
Yeah, it sounds like it's probably related to his Raynaud's syndrome. And I think this is my just digging deep and just speculating. They had a series, you know, they have a series in Chicago and Milwaukee. And Milwaukee's got the retractable roof, but I guess from what I've read, it still gets cold there in the, you know, April and October months, even with the roof. So I think they maybe just wanted to, you know, he's not, you know, feeling great. We're going to shut him down. And in the month of May, they only have one road series that's outdoors. So, you know, I think if he's back by early May, you know, he's able to pitch at home in the, in, you know, nice Tampa Bay weather and in sure. the dome there. And, you know, maybe like, cause it, the whole thing with the Raynaud syndrome is he, you know, is just can't feel his hand when it's cold out. So hopefully that I'm guessing that's just what it is, or, but it's, you know, they haven't really, they said they ran tests and, you know, everything came back looking good. So, that's all we know as of now, but, they haven't really given a timetable or anything, but I do think he could be back in early May, hopefully, if it's just, you know, a matter of them wanting to keep him away from, you know, pitching outdoors in Chicago.
Sure. Yeah, we should get a better idea there in a week. I did want to make a small correction. It is pronounced Garrett Clevinger. It's spelled Clevinger, but yeah. I looked it up. Make sure it is Clevinger. So that is now stuck in my brain. I'll never pronounce his name wrong again. we can move over to Chicago on the north side, where lefty Drew Smyly landed on the 15-day IL with a right hip impingement. Luke Little was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. We talked earlier about the Cubs bullpen as a whole, and you mentioned how shallow this bullpen is. It got even shallower with Smyly landing on the IL. I think Luke Little's a great replacement there. He's looked really strong early on. He throws really hard from the left side, a big lefty. I don't know how quickly he works his way into high leverage situations given his age, but he is the only lefty in that bullpen. So that does give him a leg up over other guys, because maybe he'll be deployed in the seventh or the eighth as a lefty specialist. But as we learned last year, Mark Leiter Jr. sort of fits that role. unorthodoxly, as he's a guy who has reverse platoon splits. He's better versus left-handed batters. So maybe Little doesn't move up, but I don't think this injury has a huge impact in terms of fantasy.
No, not really. I mean, Smyly wasn't doing a whole lot for fantasy value. But yeah, Little's, you know, obviously an interesting, you know, young lefty who throws hard. Interesting name to keep an eye on if he can stick there. Which, I mean, again, like I feel like he should, given the other options they have. But yeah, we'll see if he stays there for a while. Then he might become a hold option.
Mm-hmm. All right, and we'll wrap up the injury section with two relievers from the Arizona Diamondbacks landing on the IL with mirrored injuries. They both hit the 15-day IL with right and left shoulder inflammation, respectively. In a corresponding move, both Justin Martinez and Andrew Salfrank were recalled from the minors, and they should take over the same roles that Castro and Nelson had, except sort of further down the ladder. Justin Martinez will be like the fourth righty for holds, while Sal Frank, since there are fewer lefties in Arizona, he'll be the second lefty turn to. But both of these guys are intriguing in their own right. Martinez throws 100 miles per hour on average, and Andrew Sal Frank was really good last year pitching out of the bullpen. We saw him pitch to a 2.61 ERA. Nope, that's his AAA. He pitched to a 0 ERA in 10 innings in the major league level. He's not a big strikeout arm, but he did pitch pretty well last year. Neither of these guys are going to be holds options, but if we see, I don't know, Scott McGuff continue to struggle, or maybe Bryce Jarvis isn't really seen as a high leverage guy, we could see Martinez and Sal Frank move up.
Yeah, I mean, Martinez especially has been on my radar for a bit, and Sal Frank's shown some positive things in limited time too. So I, you know, it comes down to role with them, and, you know, consistency with, for, you know, Martinez being able to throw strikes. And they will be getting, you know, we talked about Sewell should be back soon. You know, I don't know. That's obviously going to push everyone down a little bit. It's interesting seeing Bryce Jarvis. I don't really, he doesn't strike me as a really, you know, a legitimate setup option for them. So there is definitely neither is Ryan Thompson, to be honest. So this bullpen outside of Sewell and Ginkel still has, you know, there's spots to win there. So, you know, between Sal Frank and Martinez, if they can stick around for a bit and, you know, show something, I could see them being holds candidates in the not too distant future.
Yeah, nobody's really blocking them. Ryan Thompson's the only one who's having a good year, and people familiar with Thompson will know not to believe that he's going to pitch to a sub-2 ERA all year. Though, I mean, if they're using him as a top setup option, then, you know, he's worth rostering for holds.
Yeah, I mean, Thompson maybe for now, but it's really kind of a situation I'm staying away from outside of Ginkle.
Sure. All right, that'll wrap up our injuries, and we'll wrap things up in the news and notes section with our transactions from the past week, starting off with Trevor McGill, who was activated from the 7-day IL. He missed like 3 weeks with a concussion. It was pretty serious, but he made his return, and the fantasy managers that held on to him are finally reaping the rewards as he recorded his first save of the season earlier today. Today is Thursday, the 25th. It's my sister's birthday. Happy birthday, Jessica.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. I'm sure she's listening to this. But anyway, this bullpen is very interesting in Milwaukee, given that Amir Ribe was the closer the first week of the season. Now he's being used all over the place. Then Yoel Piamps across the last week or so, last 2 weeks, has looked like the outright closer. And then today, they used McGill and Piamps interchangeably after being the 8-9 guys in the previous game. Today, they used them in the opposite order with Piamps pitching the 8th and McGill pitching the 9th. So I have no idea what this means in terms of who's going to be the closer, but at least we know it's not just one man's job right now.
Yeah, and that's, you know, basically what Pat Murphy had said. He's like, we're going to, I don't know what the ridiculous statement is that he made, but it was like, yeah, we're going to use everyone's. We're handing out holds or we're handing out saves. So maybe that's starting to actually happen here with Piamps and McGill. I really do think they want McGill to be the closer. Yeah, you know, the one thing is, I mean, yeah, I do. Obviously, I've been pumping him up for a while, but like
proponent.
Yes, a proponent for a while. I do want to see a little bit more strikeout. I want to see some more strikeouts from him. But, you know, he hasn't been hurt. He hasn't gotten damaged. You know, there's been no damage against him really for a while now. So, you know, Piamps is still, you know, he's a little sketchy. I know he had some, you know, bad defense the other day in his save, but I still just like McGill better than Piamps. And yeah, Uribe, it seems like he's just a distant memory at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I know he's been like, he hasn't been great, but just, I wonder if something else, like something happened. I don't know. It just feels like he's really in the doghouse for something more than just, you know, having like two sketchy outings. It's really weird how they've just turned their back on him. And like Elvis Peguero is getting a ton of, you know, holds opportunities now. It's like, he's fine, but Uribe's so much better. And like, I don't know. It's interesting to see what's going on there with Uribe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That bullpen is really good from top to bottom, but yeah, I agree with you. Piamps is sort of boring, and McGill's upside is so high that I would just love to see him in the closer role. Even if they're splitting it more 50-50 like we've seen the past 2 days, I think that would also be fine with me. Just makes
sure
more options on the waiver wire to roster. But yeah, I think both McGill and Piamps should be rostered, I think, across the board, just given because Piamps is just recording the majority of the saves thus far and McGill is just so much better. If you had to choose between the two, let's say you just had one roster spot and both guys were on the IL, who are you picking up?
McGill. But I do, you know, brings you, I'm trying to think, like, who do I prefer between those two? And like Jason Adam or even Hector Neris, I might even like, you know, Piamps more than Adam or Neris at this point. Just, you know, maybe not Neris, just because there is a chance that he does kind of run with that role. But like Adam, it's the short term thing, and you know, mm-hmm. even and we're gonna we'll talk about some other guys that you can drop to open up some spots in a little bit, but. Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I get what you're saying with Piamps and McGill both probably should be rostered because, yeah, at least until we figure out, you know, what's going on here. I do, you know, I prefer McGill over Piamps, but if you can, if you can find a way to have both, I guess that's, you know, not a terrible situation either.
Yep. All right, we'll move over to the Cardinals, who have been making some questionable roster moves recently. Yesterday, they optioned outfielder Jordan Walker to the minors, which has everyone in an uproar. The Cardinals just do not know what to do with their young, potentially all-star caliber outfielders. And they also did the same in the bullpen earlier this week. They sent Andre Pallante to the minors. He is one of the game's top ground ball pitchers. And while he struggled to a 6.30 ERA across his first 10 innings, I don't think much has changed for him, but he's gone. Nick Robertson is in. Do you think there's anybody that is now newly interesting in St. Louis in terms of holds?
No, not based on those moves. I mean, it's pretty, they do have the one thing they got going for them is it's pretty straightforward as to, you know, what's going on in the back end of games with Helsley in the ninth, Romero in the eighth, Kittredge in the seventh. That's been pretty universal.
Kittredge has been so good.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a this great find for them so far. So, Gallegos kind of gets lost in the mix there as their, like, fireman, you know, guy that, you know, he's fine, but it hurts in the holds leagues where he's only got two holds this year. Where Kittredge and Romero both have eight each.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a brighter outlook on Gallegos right now. I know he's pitched to a 5.40 ERA, but remember last year how concerned we were about his reduced strikeout rate? We saw his strikeout rate go from 31% in 2022 down to under 26% in 2023, so a 5% drop there, not great. And now he's back up to striking guys out again, 35%. His walk rate isn't too far outside of the norm either. So I think he's on the right track, 5.40 ERA, but a 2.43 xFIP. I sort of feel like he's probably going to return to being really good. But this is not like years past where Gallegos is the clear number two guy. And whenever Helsley struggles or needs a rest day, Gallegos is going to be the guy to get a save. It's not that situation anymore because Jojo Romero and Andrew Kittredge have both been really good. Gallegos is the only other one with a save, but the way that Romero and Kittredge are pitching, I don't know what would happen the next time a non-Ryan Helsley save opportunity arises.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's probably going to go to, I think Romero's earned a chance. I mean, he was decent as a closer for them. He was more than decent. He was really good as a closer for them last year. And I remember, you know, being excited about him. And then Helsley came back and dominated in September. But yeah, it's the one thing they got going is they have a pretty good bullpen, at least at the back end right now. You know, the front end, you know, some of those other guys, that's another question. But, you know, the top four relievers they have are, you know, you can count on those guys.
Yeah. All right. Deep holds leagues option. Luke Jackson was activated from the 15-day IL after missing time with a lower back strain. He, I think, just had two appearances before hitting the IL, but he's back. And he had one appearance before hitting the IL, and now he's back. But there's not too many, you know, traditional relievers in San Francisco outside of Duvall, Rogers, and Rogers. Ryan Walker's there, but he's a guy who can go multiple innings. He hasn't yet, but he could. Luke Jackson could be the number four option behind Duvall and the Rogers twins. I don't think I'm going out and picking him up everywhere, but if you're in like a, I don't know, NL only league with holds, then maybe Luke Jackson's an option for you.
Yeah, that's probably about it. I mean, Ryan Walker's been really good this year too, so there's, you know, more, a little bit more competition for Jackson. But yeah, he could work his way into that, you know, secondary holds, you know, option. Taylor Rogers has two holds this year. It's been kind of, he's pitched fine. It's just been frustrating, his usage or lack thereof, I guess. You know, they really do lean on Tyler Rogers. It's, you know, his ability to pitch pretty much every day is obviously nice, but yeah, I want to see Taylor Rogers do a little bit more. It's been, you know, slow out of the gate for him.
It was the same last year too.
Yeah, I know, but at least he's, yeah, that's the thing. At least he's like pitching well. It's just,
yeah,
the opportunities really haven't been there for him. It's been
last, you know, year was scary.
Yeah, that was a bad start for sure. Yeah.
All right. Speaking of scary, the Chicago White Sox activated John Brebbia from the 15-day IL. He had missed some time with a left calf strain, and he's returned to a bullpen that seems to have the closer role all tied up. Though there's not many saves or holds to go around for this team. That is one of the worst teams in history through the first 25 games of their season. Michael Kopech seems to have claimed that closer role, but I think John Brebbia should slide right into probably the number two or three holds option slot in Chicago. I am probably not picking him up just because there's not going to be too many holds to go around, and I'm not super confident that Brebby is going to be a guy worth rostering for ratios and strikeouts.
Yeah, I'm probably not picking up anyone outside of Kopech in this bullpen. Even in holds leagues, I mean, I want to see Jordan Leisure do something. I want to see, you know, Steven Wilson's been okay. You know, Brebby is going to be, it's Brebby and Wilson as like the setup options there. They're okay. They're fine. Probably, you know, week to week matchups, you can play them. But yeah, as far as, you know, rostering them the rest of the year, yeah, it's probably not something you want to do.
All right. And we'll move to Texas, where Josh Spores was activated from the 15-day IL. He missed time with a right rotator cuff strain. Bad timing for him, as Kirby Yates has locked down the closer role after Leclerc struggled to start the year. So Spores isn't going to be a guy that slides right into a closer committee. But we both like Spores stuff. He pitched well in the brief time that he was on the active roster, and I think he could quickly move up and give Yates a run for his money, if not just being the top holds option.
Yeah, I think at least, you know, you consider him as a seventh or eighth inning guy. At the moment, Robertson's been fine. He's been pretty good. Eight holds for Robertson, so he's not, you know, he's locked into one of those setup roles. But yeah, maybe Spores can, you know, be the seventh inning guy, which he kind of was before he got hurt. So that gives them, you know, a little bit of more wiggle room with Leclerc to, you know, who Leclerc's pitched better since he got demoted from the closer role, but he's still not like 100%, you know, back to where they will probably want him to be. So to handle high leverage roles at least. So, yeah, I think Spores, you know, right away gets back into the save or the holds mix. And yeah, he's still a top 15 holds guy for me.
Wow. That's pretty high praise. We'll stick in the AL West and discuss Gregory Santos, who was transferred to the 60-day IL. He's currently dealing with a right lat strain. This means that he probably won't return until early June at the earliest. So for the time being, Ryan Stanek and Munoz hold on to the top two spots in that bullpen. But when Matt Brash returns, it'll be him and those two until Santos returns, and then things will really get confusing. But right now, it means we won't see Santos for a while. And then our last transaction is Will Klein, who was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move to Alec Marsh landing on the IL. Will Klein is somewhat interesting. Zero ERA across 11 innings with a 27.3% strikeout rate at AAA. And Fangraphs gives him a 70 grade fastball. Is this somebody that you're interested in, given the lack of depth in the Kansas City bullpen?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is someone who could be a quick riser. You know, they're relying on guys like Chris Stratton right now, and he's been fine, but they're definitely in need of, you know, another setup option behind Schreiber and MacArthur being the closer. So, yeah, Klein's an interesting name to keep an eye on. I've seen his name a little bit, you know, for a little while now as a potential reliever option here. So hopefully we can see some good stuff from him. And where's John McMillan? Can we get John McMillan right? I want to see John McMillan back and dominating in this bullpen. But yeah, I know he was struggling at Triple A. So
is he?
He was the last time I checked. It's been a week now.
8.59 ERA and a 33% walk rate. That's cool.
Yeah, he might not be healthy.
He's got to figure some things out. But hey, yeah, we got somebody else to put our money on.
Right. We got Klein now.
All right. Sounds good. That will wrap up our news and notes section. When we return from this quick break, we will discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's closer ranks here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen talking relievers. We have just wrapped up our news and notes section, and it took 43 minutes. Nice. Now we can move over to three up, three down, talk about the relievers rising and falling up and down Rick's ranks. We'll start with the guys moving up. Mason Miller continues to look like the best pitcher in baseball when he is on the mound. Incredible stuff. Huge fastball, disgusting slider. Unfortunately, he pitches for the A's, so there's not many save opportunities to go around. Nonetheless, he's been used as a traditional closer and has been really dominant thus far. Any other opinions on Mason Miller?
He's just awesome. I mean,
yeah.
The only problem is obviously it's the A's, and you're just got to be prepared that, you know, there's going to be, you know, weeks, possibly months where you get limited save production from him. Mm-hmm. But as long as he's, you know, still pitching well, because he's still going to throw. He's still going to pitch. As long as he's still not, you know, wrecking your ratios and getting a bunch of strikeouts as well, then, you know, he's not hurting your team. So the save production is going to be spotty for sure. But, this is pretty much everything. This is, you know, a very solid, kind of everything you can ask for in a second reliever on your roster. And right now he's probably acting more like a top 10 reliever because of the injuries, you know, throughout the game and throughout, you know, the, you know, bullpens. But I think he settles in more as like a, you know, top 15, kind of like that 15 range where, mm-hmm. you know, he's just going to be a really good pitcher who gets maybe 20 saves, and that's the only reason why he's going to be, you know, not a top five reliever.
Yeah, he is pitching so well right now, and he's putting up like Edwin Diaz numbers, and he the stuff that he produces is also pretty similar to Diaz. But yeah, I think Mason Miller has clearly proven me very, very wrong thus far. We'll stick in the AL West and discuss Carlos Estevez, who, while, you know, not blowing anybody's socks off, not changing mine or Rick's mind about whether or not Robert Stevenson should have taken his role to start the year. I mean, not that he had the choice, but
that's the
Carlos
thing.
Estevez pitching well enough and getting all the saves to warrant a slight rise up the ranks, because he's got a 2.57 ERA. He's not walking anybody, and he's got four saves for an Angels team.
Yeah, he's been fine. He's that's kind of all that it took for him to move up is just the one blow up. And I think we've seen a little bit of a, you know, I was obviously concerned with how he ended last season, and then, you know, we saw the velo decrease. That obviously raised a red flag, but I think that velo decrease has come with, you know, some added command. So I'll take that trade off because it's been working. I don't know how long it's going to last. I mean, he does have a crazy high called strike rate, so hitters just aren't really swinging at his stuff in the zone. I think that could, you know, change, and he might start getting hit around a little bit. But for now, I mean, there's, you know, again, there's a lot of injuries in the bullpen landscape, and, you know, just him being a full-time closer of really no competition and starting off the year pretty well. Yeah, he's at least in the top 25. So he's up, he's moving up for now.
Big riser.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, we'll see. It's a good start for him. Hopefully he continues to, you know, prove me wrong.
Yeah, another player that's proven you wrong, has gotten off to a good start, and is rising up slightly from the bottom to the less bottom of the ranks. Kyle Finnegan has continued to pitch well this year, pitched to a 2.89 ERA. He's got seven saves, and despite Hunter Harvey having an incredible year despite his last outing, he's held on to that closer role. And I don't maintain any confidence that's going to continue. We've seen his strikeout minus walk percentage get even worse after it was already terrible last year. It's under 8% right now because he's walking a ton of guys. But Kyle Finnegan is the closer in Washington, and right for the time being is holding on to that role.
Yeah, all the same reasons kind of Estevez. It's, you know, he is a closer. He's a full-time closer on a team that gets saves. I have less faith in him than Estevez because, yeah, he's got Harvey behind him. I do, you know, Finnegan has, he hasn't really changed anything. And, we talked about the sweeper. That was mentioned in the offseason. He's only thrown it eight times.
of course.
But it's had, like, I mean, it obviously limited, you know, work, but you know, eight times and three at bats, two strikeouts and a 60% whiff rate. Like, just can we see a little bit more? Can we get a little bit more out of that? Let's he must not feel comfortable with it yet, which is, I get it. I understand. But like that,
I mean, it's really not like his control could get any worse.
Yeah. I mean, just like, I mean, give it a little bit more, like, especially like, you know, a game like today. And I know he's trying to, you know, keep the Nationals in the game. They were down one, they were down two, or down one in the ninth inning. He pitched the top of the ninth. And it's like, you know, maybe that's the time where you work on the sweeper a little bit more. I don't know. It's just, I want to see him kind of unleash it a little bit, because he can't be throwing that four seamer not 73% of the time. And the splitter's fine. It's just, you know, it's not really the best out pitch for anyone, for him, for at least it's gotten hit around a lot this year. So, mm-hmm. I mean, he needs to develop that sweeper, I think, for me to kind of trust him any more than I have so far.
Totally. All right. And as closers rise up the ranks, others have to fall down the ranks. So we'll talk about the three guys falling down your ranks, starting with Andrés Muñoz in Seattle. That situation is just Andrés Muñoz just not being used as the traditional closer. They like to use him as the high leverage arm. And while that was expected, I don't think we thought it would be to this effect in terms of his fantasy value. He's only gotten two saves. He's got three holds. Those numbers match what Ryan Stanek has done. Ryan Stanek has pitched to a better ERA as well. And Andrés Muñoz was probably drafted in the top 100 in everybody's fantasy drafts. So this is pretty unfortunate, and I think it's just going to get worse when Matt Brash returns, because there will just be more high-end options to use Andrés Muñoz outside of the ninth.
Well, it's definitely usage is a factor, but there's really, I mean, the stuff's just like disappeared. I don't know. The rate, I mean, rating, I mean, Stuff Plus, PLV, not a big fan of him at all this year. I mean, he's getting whiffs. He's got a 41% whiff rate. But you know, his command has been, I think it's, you know, why his stuff and PLV values are so low is because his command has been so bad. You know, has the worst zone. I think he had our second lowest zone rate amongst closers, 36%. You know, I don't know. It's a command thing with him. Always has been. The stuff, I mean, should play up eventually. But yeah, there's definitely some red flags here with, you know, his just overall ability so far, and the usage doesn't help.
Yeah, it seems like a situation similar to Tanner Scott. I'm trying to find out if people are laying off of his pitches more often, but he's not getting strikes with his fastball at all. Yeah, his strike rate has plummeted, and the swing rate against him is down over 6%. So that could be a reason why he's struggled. Players are just not offering at his four seamer, and he's struggling to get it into the zone. Same with the sinker. The slider, you know, still pretty solid, 22% swinging strike rate. But elsewhere, it's not doing its job. Its ICR is pretty high as well. So when he is allowing contact, it's going a long way. So yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the sinker four seam usage has changed as well.
Yeah, he's preferring the sinker over the four seamer.
That's a big reason in the drop in like Stuff Plus. And I wonder, I don't know if that's something that's going to stick for sure, or I don't know what the deal is with that, but yeah, it's really interesting to see him, you know, go really sinker heavy so far.
Yeah, definitely. And that pitch is a little slower too. I mean, obviously got more movement, but maybe he's hoping to try to get more ground balls. I think the ground ball rate on the sinker right now has been 80%. So, I mean, that's working, but yeah, I think he's got to get it into the zone, or at least get more strikes with it, because I don't think sinkers usually have 16% swinging strike rates for too long, but maybe that's a good sign. I don't know. It's really hard to tell, because you don't want him to go away from what, you know, got him success in the first place. But the sinker, actually, despite having bad PLV, which I think that's just a sinker thing, swing strike rate, 96th percentile, 79th percentile ground ball percentage. It's been working, but I think he's just not getting enough strikes with the four seamer.
Yeah, that's the foundation right there. Yeah, that's where he needs to start. And I think he'll be fine. It's, again, we're still in April here. The season is moving pretty fast. It's crazy. We're almost at the end of April already. I think he'll be all right when all is said and done. But it's a little bit of a red flag with, you know, how things are looking for him right now.
Next, we've got Kevin Ginkle in Arizona, who is moving down, probably not because of his performance, but because Paul Sewald is nearing a return probably this weekend or next week. So he's likely to lose the closer role pretty soon. Do you have anything else outside of that, you know, with Sewald returning, that he's going to lose the role?
And we can lump in Griffin Jacks with this as well, because
yeah,
it's really just those two guys. It's probably their last week as, you know, on the closer list. And, you know, Ginkle, at least I have a little bit more faith in. I mean, Jacks isn't going to be closing out games with Duran back. That's definitely not happening. But yeah, Ginkle, you know, and Jacks and Ginkle have both pitched fine. They did well as fill-ins. And I mean, how many saves? Jacks didn't end up with more than, he had 3 saves. Okay. I mean, you know, for a month, you know, he had 3 saves and pretty good ratios, good strikeout rates. So yeah, I mean, if you were able to get Jacks, you know, beginning of the month, you probably are okay with, you know, how things turned out with him. I would say it's, you know, for those who spent like $300 in FAB or 30% of their FAB, maybe so much, but you know, he's been fine. And Ginkle's been pretty good as well. So I'm surprised at how quickly, though, that Duran and Sewald are coming back. I thought that was going to be more of a mid-May thing.
Totally, yeah. I thought Duran would probably be closer to the same IL stint as Devin Williams, but I guess Williams is going to be the one who's going to miss a significant amount of time. But Sewald and Duran had the same injury, I think. It was oblique.
They did. I wasn't sure because, like, Sewald's came out, like, a couple weeks or a week later, and I wasn't sure, like, when did they actually, you know, have the, like, when did the injury, you know what I mean, like, when are they gonna actually start throwing again? And they all they ended up being on like the same exact timetable, crazily. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be nice to have a couple top tier closers back in the mix, right? I'm sure that will shake up your closer ranks a little bit. But that will wrap up our 3 up 3 down segment. To recap, Mason Miller, Carlos Estevez, and Kyle Finnegan are rising up the closer ranks, while Andres Munoz, Kevin Ginkle, and Griffin Jacks are falling down. We'll move over to our early advanced stats leaderboards as we still have a little bit of time left. This is just a chance for us to look at some of the advanced stats, which some of them stabilize pretty quickly, especially Stuff Plus by Eno Saris. That one stabilizes very, very quickly. Same with strikeout rate and walk rates. So we will run through these and we'll be able to look at these throughout the season. I think this is a great indicator for relievers because it's really hard to look at small sample sizes with traditional metrics and try to decipher who's good and who's not. WHIP is not going to tell you whose ERA is earned and not, but maybe looking at a pitcher's stuff or their PLV or their strikeout rates is going to tell a different story. But we'll start with PLV. Interestingly enough, Yennier Cano topping the Stuff Plus or the PLV leaderboard. He's pitched to a 2.92 ERA and a 24.5% strikeout rate this year, 4 holds. I don't know. That's pretty crazy, especially because he's a sinker guy.
Yeah, so I think PLV is a little bit more favorable towards the sinker guys. At least that's what I remember Kyle telling me. Because I know, you'll see a couple, you know, interesting names on here that it's like, well, these guys don't like. I mean, Tyler Rogers is on here.
Whoa.
Yeah, exactly. So it does favor ground ball types a little bit more than Stuff Plus. But okay. Cano, this is 2 years in a row. I mean, last year at this point, too, Cano was leading PLV leaderboards. So very, you know, let's see if he can keep it going. You know, he hasn't been as dominant as he was at the beginning of last year this season, but he does. I feel like there's at least more signs that like kind of show that he can stay as like a really, really good reliever, just, you know, somewhere in between like his start last season and then the second half where he tailed off. I think there's somewhere in between he can kind of sit and just be, you know, a really good reliever.
Totally. Fourth on the list, Yimi Garcia at 5.58 PLV. That's really interesting because it's a big jump from where he was at last year at 5.10. And it's even more interesting because he's pitched so well. So I think this is a good indicator of Yimi having better stuff this year, pitching better. And that should give you some confidence that while he won't have a 0.35 WHIP for the whole year, he should continue to pitch really well.
Yeah, I mean, his stuff has been, I mean, it's the velo's up a little bit. It's just the swing and miss that's come from him this year. And it started happening last year. I remember, you know, before last year, my whole thing with Garcia was like he's not a big swing and miss guy. He's like a fine reliever. And then last year, you know, it started ticking up a little bit. And I was like, oh, you could be a kind of a sleeper all of a sudden this season. And now I was not expecting this at all. And, you know, he had, the great opportunity with Swanson and Romano out to get saves early in the season. So it kind of put him on the map a little bit more. I really, for him, I hope he can keep this going. And I do. Yeah. Like you said, I think there's a chance, he could take over the closer role of Romano if he, isn't able to kind of get back to where he was. And, just going back to last, second half of last year, Romano was battling through injuries and he was, you never know with closers, the wheels could fall off at any second and that could be the last time we see them as a closer, it's could happen to Romano as well. So, hopefully, in holds leagues, he's a must roster, but someone to keep an eye on as well and save only.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a few more interesting PLV guys. James MacArthur has looked really good. 5.55 PLV. That's thanks to a curveball that has a 97th percentile, 6.11 PLV. So I think James MacArthur is looking pretty legit as the closer in Kansas City. And outside of that, Brian Hudson and Justin Slayton. Brian Hudson, my guy, looking really good. He's pitched really well thus far. And then your guy, Justin Slayton, Rule 5 pick for the Red Sox, has looked really good. So I think their breakouts are backed up by PLV thus far.
Yeah, there's a lot of things backing up at least Slayton's, breakout and same with Hudson. I mean, Hudson's been just dominant at eliminating hard contact. I mean, not a huge swing and miss guy. He doesn't throw that hard, but I mean, the sweeper has been really good for him and, he's just been able to pitch to contact and get a lot of weak outs. So, again, another guy the Brewers have just kind of molded into a potential relief ace.
Totally. All right, we'll move over to Stuff Plus, which is, somewhat of a rival to PLV in a way, but we love Stuff Plus nonetheless. Interestingly enough, Trevor McGill leading the Stuff Plus leaderboard at 155. That's, I think, a good indicator of why we are so enamored with Trevor McGill, because I think you look at his numbers last year, and while he was really good, there's a sense that this guy's 30 years old, like it's a late career breakout. He didn't get like any saves, he wasn't like a top holds option, he still had a 3.63 ERA, so there wasn't anything blowing you out of the water. But then you like start to dive deep into him and you realize like, holy moly, this guy's got everything working for him. And I think this Stuff Plus number by itself just tells you what Trevor McGill's working with. And as a 6'8" guy who's 250 pounds and has a pretty clear shot to the closer role, I mean, Trevor McGill, I think, is the real deal.
Yeah, it's one of those ones. And again, this is, one of those things where the eye test doesn't always match up necessarily with like the Stuff Plus number test or the PLV number test. But with McGill, it's like, the eye test and the number, they check out. Like you're just watching him, you can tell the stuff is legit. So yeah, it's good to see this back it up.
All right. And then I think the most surprising one on this list is Calvin Fauché at 3 with a 150 Stuff Plus. He has looked really good and very different for the Marlins this year. He was a guy who was pitching for the Rays for the past couple of years, and he never really found success there. And I'm talking like 7 ERA last year and 25 innings for the Rays. Then he goes to Miami. Cannot remember which trade it was, but I remember him getting traded. And so far, 0 ERA. His strikeout rate has skyrocketed to 37%. He's walked just 3% of the batters he faced. Is Calvin Fauché a guy that we should be giving some consideration to? Not only because he's looked so good, like such a different pitcher, and his stuff is playing so well, but also with Tanner Scott struggling and nobody else in that bullpen, it looks like Calvin Fauché is the number 2 reliever in this Miami bullpen now.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's, looking into it, there's not a ton that changed. The stuff still seems the same. He tops out at 91 with his cutter, 96 with the fastball.
That cutter's crazy. 96th percentile PLV.
Yeah, that's what the cutter is, where he's been doing.
And the curve, 93rd percentile. Wow,
he's upped the cutter usage and dropped the curveball, the sweeper usage. So yeah, he's just cutter, sinker, curveball now. Yeah, I mean the sinker's got a 43% whiff rate, which I don't think that's gonna stay. But there's something interesting going on here, obviously, and yeah, there's room for, you know, holds or even save, you know, potential here in that Marlins bullpen. So I'm still a little skeptical. I'm watching him. It's only been how many innings? I think he got called up. 7.2 innings. Mm-hmm. So it's a little early for me to totally buy in. But yeah, this is obviously, you know, raising, you know, alarm bells as to, like, you know,
yeah,
this guy needs to be watched right now.
Yeah, because Stuff Plus stabilizes very quickly. I cannot remember the exact number, but it's like a certain number of pitches. It's like 50 pitches or something.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Something like that.
Really fast. Looking at the cutter, it looks like the shape of it has changed. The IVB went from 3.7, that's inches, right, last year, mm-hmm, to negative 0.7. So that one has a very, very different shape, and I think it has more drop now. That's very interesting there. And Calvin Fauché, like you said, will need a larger sample size. Further down the list, we've got a lot of names that we're very familiar with in terms of, you know, Emmanuel Clase, Tanner Scott, but Michael Kopech is there. Isaiah Campbell, who he's still gone, right?
He's
not around. Robert Suarez there too, with his incredible fastball, and Jake Diekman and Pierce Johnson as well. Two interesting names. Is there anybody you wanted to talk about here, or should we move on to swinging strike rate?
I think most of these names we're relatively familiar with, so we can move on, try to hit some of the more unknown guys coming up.
All right. Swinging strike rate. Very interesting name up top. Fernando Cruz, 34-year-old who has not pitched much in the majors, but he's looked really great to start this year. 1.74 ERA, 50% strikeout rate, because he's got the best splitter in baseball.
Yeah. I mean, he's, I don't even know what to say about him, because it's just, I remember putting together my holds list beginning of the year, and or was it last November, and then putting it together before the season started, and, you know, Cruz was not projected to be on the opening day roster for the Reds, and I'm like, this guy's in my, like, top 60 right now. Like, he's the only guy who I have in, like, the top 80 who's, like, not projected to make a roster. Like, what am I missing something here? Like, what are the Reds? The Reds can't, like, I'm like, okay, it comes down to the fact that Cruz has, you know, options left, but, you know, I guess luckily there were some injuries there, so Cruz made the opening day roster, and he's been so good. That splitter is, you know, splitters are, you know, hard to trust on a long-term basis, but for now, that splitter has been so, so good, and it's, I mean, definitely the best splitter in baseball. I would love to see him closing out games. I know, you know, Alexis Diaz hasn't done anything to lose the job yet, but I just want to, Cruz would just be like an electric, you know, closer potentially. They've been using him kind of to get out of jams, and that's worked well because of his swing and miss stuff. I get that, but he's legit. He's the real deal.
And I know you already aren't a huge fan of Alexis Diaz, but I'm already starting to see signs that he's not going to hold on to this role. He's sitting a tick slower on his fastball. He's sporting a career high 15% walk rate. His swinging strike rate has plummeted. And his ICR rates have climbed. So while he's getting fewer swings and misses, he's also allowing louder contact. And so up to this point, he's been lucky because he's allowed zero home runs, but he's called Great American Small Park his home. So it's right, like, on the horizon, if these numbers persist, you know, slower fastball, louder contact, more contact in a Great American ballpark, I think he's just going to start giving up a ton of home runs. And that means that it would be, time to start considering picking up Fernando Cruz, because I think he will be the first option when Alexis,
Alexis
Diaz. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, Diaz is doing the same thing he was doing in the second half last year. It's, you know, I was holding out some hope he would be able to, you know, return to his, you know, first half of 2023 form. Like, maybe he just got tired at the end of last season, but it looks like it's still the same kind of, you know, issues that we were dealing with Diaz last year.
Yep. All right, let's look down the rest of this list. We got a couple lefties and Andrew Chafin and Gabe Spear. Mason Miller, obviously, like number two on every single metric here. Just absolutely incredible. I think Adrian Morejon is a pretty interesting one because he wasn't a huge strikeout guy in the past, and he's been very solid since coming up to the major league team. 34.5% strikeout rate, very small sample size, but I think that newfound swinging strike rate is somewhat intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, there's a good chance he might be the best lefty in that Padres bullpen, which is like, I mean, look at the guys they've added, and
yeah, even they got like some good lefties,
bringing back Cosgrove and then adding Peralta. Mm-hmm. Matsui, I wonder, I mean, it's going to take a while for Morejon to get into some sort of setup role here, but I think he's got the best stuff of the lefties, and probably the second best stuff of anyone in that bullpen behind Robert Suarez. I mean, the fastball's up to 97 miles per hour. That's a nice uptick from when he was a starter. The slider has a 50% whiff rate. Sweeper's been, you know, used more against lefties as a strikeout pitch. It hasn't really worked out, but the four seamer and slider combo, that's really all that matters, and that's what he's throwing the most. And those two pitches are really, they really look pretty good right now. So I wonder, yeah, I want to see more from him.
Yeah, and then right below him is Reed Garrett with an 18.1% swing strike rate. That's tied with Morejon, except Garrett's got a much larger sample size, and he's come out of absolutely nowhere to look like a completely dominant pitcher for the Mets. I don't know. What do you see in him that has led to this incredible performance to start the year?
Garrett is an – so that Garrett's an interesting one because PLV is not a big fan of him still. So that's going to be one of those, like, let's see how, you know, PLV versus the other crowd, I guess. It's, you know, not a ton has changed with him, outside of, I guess he's just been, you know, throwing his splitter more, and that's kind of become a pitch that people are chasing, at the moment, when that's kind of where I wonder if, you know, eventually teams are going to, or, you know, hitters and teams are going to kind of, you know, see the book on him as being, you know, he's throwing, I think I wrote him up today, I think he's got like a 33-34% zone rate. He's really just getting a lot of swings and misses out of the zone. So I think, you know, teams start being a little bit more patient with him. I do think that they start laying off the slider, splitter, then he's going to come back down to earth. Now, I still think that he can be a pretty successful. I think, you know, with the multi-inning usage, he's kind of like a Seth Lugo with the six pitch mix he has. And, I think that could be the where he settles in as, which would be fine. Obviously the Mets will take another Seth Lugo again, and, you know, multi-inning reliever like that. But I don't, you know, I'm hesitant to put him in like the top 20 for holds right now. He probably deserves it with the strikeout numbers, but I just, you know, I'm a little hesitant to see how this, you know, once he starts giving up some more hard contact and, you know, getting hit around a little bit more.
All right, we'll move over to whiff rate, which very similar to swinging strike rate. Swinging strike rate is whiffs per pitch, while whiff rate is whiffs per swing. So there's going to be a lot of the same names. I think the most interesting one that's on both lists is Nick Sandlin to me. He has become a big swinging strike guy. Last year, I mean, pretty decent 15% swinging strike rate. Now he's up over 19%. And on top of that, or that swing strike rate, in terms of whiff rate, he's up over 42%. And that has led to a huge increase in strikeout rate, over 7%. He's striking out nearly 35% of the batters he's faced while reducing his walk rate by 3%. And that's led to a 1.69 ERA. And he's quickly moving into one of the top setup options in Cleveland. Obviously, they are incredible at producing relief pitchers out of nothing. They've done that with Hunter Gaddis. They have Scott Barlow in town, but Sandlin, I think, is going to challenge Gaddis and Barlow for that eighth inning role.
I think he might already be. I mean, but this thing, both Barlow and Gaddis have pitched really well, and now you have Sandlin into the mix, and that gives you a nice, you know, 6-7-8-9 situation between, you know, Barlow, Sandlin, Gaddis, and Class A. So that bullpen always seems to figure itself out, and it looks like it has already. Yeah, Barlow being on this list too. I mean, it's great to see Barlow back getting a bunch of whiffs. He's looked really good with Cleveland, and you know, he's a guy who's about to be a free agent. And, you know, it's obviously early for next season, but, you know, probably, you know, I could see Scott Barlow getting, if he finishes the season well as well, I've seen, you know, some Scott Barlow closer interest next year. So, but Sandlin, yeah, funky delivery, throws, you know, from that sidearm angle, and he's able to get a bunch of swings and misses from it. Just, you know, a lot of nasty stuff from that weird angle. That slider is, you know, been really good this season, and it's probably going to revert back a little bit, but I mean, it's still a, you know, 40%, you know, whiff rate pitch for him. So, yeah, Sandlin, you know, Sandlin's good. He's the top 40, top 30, you know, holds guy right now, but I don't know if there's much more room for him to be any, you know, to really max out. I think his potential might be maxed out right now. I don't know.
Yeah. Hard to get any better than that.
Yeah.
We can move over to XFIP, which is one of our favorite ERA estimators. Actually, let's combine XFIP with Sierra, because both of these leaderboards pretty similar. Obviously, they're going to have slight differences as these are calculated differently. But on both of them, Adam Ottavino on top with a 0.94 XFIP and a 0.64 Sierra. That's absolutely wild, especially considering I thought Adam Ottavino was on his way out, honestly. Yeah. Last year, he really fell off in the strikeout department and the walks department, and his ERA and his whip rose, and now he's just pitching absolutely incredibly. As we mentioned earlier, 50% strikeout rate and a sub-2 ERA, just absolutely incredible work from Adam Ottavino. What are you seeing that's different here that's making him so good?
He's been throwing his slider a little bit more, and it's not even like, it's more from last year for whatever reason was kind of an outlier. He was throwing a sinker more than a sweeper, and now he's back to the sweeper being above. I mean, he's throwing the sinker and sweeper at the same amount this year, I guess, but you know, at the very least, the sweeper should be, you know, around 40% for him, and you know, that's where he's going to be at his best. And it's even, you know, I thought last year was a down year. He lost velo. I'm like, yeah, it makes sense why no one, you know, he opted out of his contract, thought he was going to get paid, and he never got the deal he wanted. And
yeah, that was
it made sense. Maybe that's giving him kind of a chip on his shoulder to like prove that, hey, like I'm not, you know, I'm still here. I'm not dead yet. Still able
even
to
at
get,
38.
Yeah. So, nothing really crazy sticks out as far as just the sweeper yeah, usage being up. And I think
it's performing way better too. Last year, it had a 26.8% swinging or CSW, and that CSW is now at 40% now as the swinging strikes are back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens. I feel like there's going to be some regression with all these Mets guys, because it's just weird that they're all just dominating like they have been so far. Uh-huh. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's exciting for Ottavino being, you know, seeing him up there as the only guy with a sub-1 XFIP and Sierra at the moment.
Crazy. Yeah, that's wild. Yeah. Yeah, and then there's a lot of other familiar names on both of these lists, ones that we've already talked about this episode. Yeah. Hunter Harvey, Morejon, Fernando Cruz, Reed Garrett, Mason Miller, Fauché even. On the other one, all of those guys are there as well. Is there anybody from either the XFIP or the Sierra leaderboard that stands out as somebody that you'd like to discuss?
I mean, let's see. Gabe Spears, a guy I like a lot, lefty for the Mariners. Hasn't gotten a ton of holds chances yet, but I think he eventually will, you know, be more of a regular there. And then, you know, Cole Sands, just kind of coming from out of nowhere, has had a great season so far. Not a ton of holds as well, but a 40% K rate. And he's in here on the Sierra list with a 1.35 Sierra, right behind Craig Kimbrel. So, I mean, Sands is an interesting, probably, you know, I wonder, you know, with the rotation issues, I wonder if he ends up getting a chance to start at some point. He does have 5 pitches, doesn't throw you know, doesn't really throw hard, but there's a, you know, a five pitch mix here that could probably work in a starting role. But yeah, Sands is a deep league name to keep an eye on as well.
Yeah, it looks like Sands has started to incorporate his cutter more often, over 20% more often, and he's throwing that pitch for strikes like crazy, 90th percentile strike rate. So maybe that's helping the rest of his arsenal get swings out of the zone. Looks like the curveball's O swing has risen. The fastball's O swing has risen. I figured that one out.
Yeah, you can see the cutter. I mean, he's using it almost strictly against lefties, and he's just burying it down and in.
Yeah,
That's become like one of those trendy pitches for righties. You know, that cutter down and into lefties. Yeah, that's the new, that's one of the new, you know, things, and it's, you see why it's been super effective. So yeah, he's really taken wow, he's really incorporated that as a big part of his repertoire. So yeah, this could be something that sticks as well.
Yeah, and then sort of similar for Spear as well. His four-seam fastball usage has gone up 10%, 11% to 32%. And that makes sense because last year it performed just as well as it did this year, but now he's throwing it more. Last year he had a 21% swing strike rate. This year, 20%. So it's actually a little worse, but it's still 95th percentile in terms of four-seamers. So he's using that pitch really well. I think he's spotting it up in the zone a lot, 56% of the time, and I think that's working pretty well for Spear. We will wrap up this section talking about strikeout rate and CSW rate. We'll start out with strikeout rate. We got three guys at 50%. It's the names, you know, we expected when the season started, you know, Fernando Cruz, Reed Garrett, and Mason Miller, the top three closers in baseball. Yeah. But nonetheless, those guys have been absolutely incredible. They're followed by Adam Ottavino and Aroldis Chapman, who's I think he might be going back to the old Aroldis Chapman again.
Yeah, that was long lived.
The 1 year.
Well, I mean, he was so good in the first like 2 weeks of the year, and now it's just, yeah, the wheels have fallen off.
Uh-huh.
You know, you never know when it's going to happen with Chapman, but you just know it's going to, like, there's going to be a massive, you know, 2 week plus meltdown with him. He can't find
the zone. I don't know what it was last year. Last year, he like rediscovered his fastball velocity, got it back up to 99 miles per hour, but now he's just back down to 97.4 where he was at, in 2022.
Yeah, it's concerning for sure. And, you know, I think the Pirates probably, I mean, they don't have a ton of options at the moment, but once they get like Berukki back, I mean, they gives them another lefty. I feel like they, you know, he could be at a high leverage role fairly quickly if he doesn't, you know, get this thing together here.
Uh-huh. And then other guys that we've mentioned on here, Cole Sands, Jimmy Garcia, Gabe Spear. I love to see Craig Kimbrell here, though. We haven't talked about him much, honestly. We did early on when we were discussing that his fastball was slower, but it was still in producing great PLV numbers. That's still the case. It's still 2 miles per hour slower, but it's still got a 94th percentile PLV as he's been able to control the pitch. It's led to a 42.5% strikeout rate, which last year he did, bounce back from his rough 2022, got a strikeout rate over 33%. But right now he's pitching at like, you know, 2021 and prior to that levels.
Yeah, I mean, and he's still at the velo looks down, but he's able to ramp up when he needs to. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that's like we talked about it a little bit, I don't know, last week or 2 weeks ago. That should be good for him in the long term, you know, keeping him healthy for a full season. When he signed there, it just made sense. It's a big ballpark, just good team, good, you know, he's going to get a bunch of save chances.
Yep.
Just a perfect fit for him. And yeah, glad to see it's working out for him.
All right, let's close things out with our CSW percentage. This one has all of the familiar names except for one. We've talked about every single player. Mason Miller at the top of the list, 41.1%, followed by Adam Ottavino, James MacArthur, Reed Garrett, Fernando Cruz, and we've also got Carlos Estevez, Scott Barlow, Nick Sandler. There's actually two guys we haven't mentioned. We got Joe Jimenez and Stephen Okert. Stephen Okert was traded from the Marlins to the Twins, and it's interesting that his CSW rate is so high at 37%, given he's got a 5.14 ERA and a 1.86 whip across his first seven innings this year. So I still like Stephen Okert, but if he's pitching poorly and the Twins aren't, you know, they start to not trust him as much, that might be concerning, but I love that his underlying metrics are still intact.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little surprised that I mean, well, I, you know, WHIP and ERA are, you know, not the best indicators of anything right now at this point in the season. But like, yeah, I guess he's just been getting hit around a lot, but there's not a ton of hard contact. He's not walking a ton of people. So that 2.05 WHIP he's got right now is not, it's kind of, it's, it feels like an outlier. I mean, this, his slider's always been a really good pitch. I do wonder, you know, now if Duran coming back, like what happens in the back end of the bullpen there? Does he see any hold chances, or is it pretty much, is he relegated to the middle relief role? That remains to be seen.
Yeah. All right. Let's wrap things up with Joe Jimenez, who is using his pitches very differently after being a guy who's consistently thrown his fastball 60% of the time with his slider around 30%. He's flipped that, the slider going 50% of the time, the four seamer just under 50%. And that has helped a lot as his walk rate has plummeted down to 2.9%. His strikeout rate is up. He's getting a lot more ground balls too, which is interesting. But just having a great year. I think his BABIP is really low, and that's why his ERA is under one. But nonetheless, Joe Jimenez looking really good in his second year in Atlanta.
There's definitely an article from like 2021, or one of my holds list articles, where probably 2021, where I was like advocating for Joe Jimenez to throw his slider and fastball more.
Wow, 50%. They listen.
Now 3 years later, but like, cause he's always thrown his four seamer, you know, 60% to 30% with his slider. And it's like, just,
yeah,
you know, make get that closer to 50-50. Like, you know, a lot of the other guys who are similar to you, good closers, like a Jordan Romano, you know, it's like throw those pitches more like a 50-50 split. And then, you know, let's see what happens. And that's, he's been so good so far this year. This is easily the best, you know, he's on track for the best season of his career so far. So hopefully this split stays, and, you know, he uses that slider a lot more, because yeah, that's, I mean, he's been great. He's been a great find in holds leagues, and I'm happy to have him in our reliever league. Him and Fernando Cruz are one of my last like two guys. I'm like, who have been working out really well.
Smart. Yeah. That league has been tough for me. I'm still trying to figure things out. We're at the point where it's like, is it a 10 team or is it 12 team league?
It's 10.
Oh yeah. It still feels, I could not imagine a 12 team league. Waiver wire is so shallow. there's nobody to pick from, but hey, luckily I got my guy, Brian Hudson, but Adbert Alzolay was my second pick. So that's not going too well. But nonetheless, that will wrap up our discussion regarding the early advanced stats leaderboards. Definitely some interesting stuff and some interesting names to keep an eye on throughout the year, and to maybe, you know, put on your watch list or pick up as guys that could play themselves into bigger roles as they continue their hot starts to the season. But that will wrap up this episode of In the Pen. Rick, go ahead and plug your Twitter and anything else you've got working.
Yeah, you know what I'm working on. You can find me at I am Rick Graham on Twitter, and yeah, just, you know, putting out three lists every week and trying to navigate this reliever carousel that we have.
Yeah, totally. All right. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. Obviously doing the weekend editions of the First Pitch podcast, doing my personal podcast, Free Baseball, basically weekly, playing time analysis over at Baseball HQ, a weekly reliever ranks article, and all sorts of stuff all over the place. But make sure to tune in next week for the next episode of In the Pen.